Hi, my name is Johnny Gartner, and thank you so much for joining me for episode 21 of the Cedar 60 podcast. This week's episode is an interview with Dr. Mark Gaffney, who serves as professor of biology here at Cedarville University. Dr. Gaffney is a graduate of Grace College, where he received his bachelor's degree in science education and general science. He later received his master's in environmental studies from The Ohio University and his PhD in ecology from Colorado State University. He is passionate about challenging students as they develop a holistic and integrative biblical understanding of caring for creation and teaches courses ranging from introductory and advanced ecology to mapping and spatial analysis, as well as environmental ethics. His research interests range from biogeography to climate change and environmental justice, and he can be often found in streams, grasslands, and forests, or in all three. And now, here's my interview with Dr. Mark Gaffney on climate change and Christianity. Welcome back to the Cedar 60 podcast. My name is Johnny Gartner. Thank you so much for joining us. With me today is Dr. Mark Gaffney, who serves as professor of biology here at Cedarville University. And he's here to talk with us about climate change on Earth Day. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Glad to join.
So if you could first just start out addressing the issue, kind of the main question that has been a really politically hot topic lately is climate change real?
Yeah, I think to answering that question, I would say yes. I think as a scientist, I would wholly agree. The science is there that to support and back that information up that we've observed and documented enough at this point, several decades on, and understanding what actually causes it continues. We understand it even more than we did when we initially began to hypothesize or theorize that this is what was occurring. So. Yeah, I think to the point now where I wouldn't say that that we're settled on every little jot and tittle, but I think overall the best understanding of what we are observing is the theory that climate change is human caused.
Yeah. So, you know, you said human caused. There's a lot of different background histories that go with the word climate change, a lot of different political opinions. So if you could maybe give a little bit of background on the arguments that come along with it. I mean, we think of Al Gore talking about global warming in the early 2000s, now onto more carbon dioxide type caused issues, you know, melting of the glaciers, rising oceans. What are some of the crises that we could be seeing in the next couple of years? Just some of those kinds of things.
Sure. So I think, to begin with, the basic science sort of just goes to suggest, and it's actually old science, which a lot of people don't realize. It was mid 1800s where we discovered what greenhouse gases were. We studied or discovered early on that fossil fuel combustion emitted those greenhouse gases. It was Arrhenius, a Swedish chemist who predicted actually that if we continued burning coal and if we eventually doubled atmospheric CO2 from the concentrations then, that he predicted there would be a 5 degree centigrade increase in temperatures. And that was basically just pen and paper. And I point out to a lot of my classes that really that's kind of the high end of what our more sophisticated models are predicting at this point for the end of the century. As we have put more CO2 into the atmosphere, as a greenhouse gas, we're aware that it does inevitably trap more heat. There are no doubt, I mean, people always ask me, is climate changing? I'm like, well, it's always changing. It's constantly, and there's lots of potential causes for that. But when we talk about global climate change, we certainly would look at the different facets, and we've addressed those, I think, at this point. A lot of the ones that we tend to focus on are solar variability and volcanic activity. Those together even make up a small fraction of the total of what we have observed. As we continue to move forward, we've had, you know, these iterations or chances to kind of say, well, with this much more increase of a CO2, we could then predict this much change in temperature or whatever the feedback would be. And those predictions have held pretty true over the last several decades as well.
Yeah, you talked about, you know, kind of not a somewhat not basic understanding of kind of how the science works. You know, one of the things that has been really addressed
by the pandemic is that there's a significant distrust of science in some areas, especially by some of the more conservative sides of the argument. So could you maybe address why this science can be trusted and how it really is the fact that we can know to be true?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, it's an interesting one. I think, again, that kind of goes to some historical context. You mentioned Al Gore, of course, he's sort of been the face of climate change, for better or worse. And I think it's one of those cases where, you know, if you know a little of the history, you kind of can understand how we got here kind of thing. The environment at large was not a political issue up through the 70s, really. It was really in early 1980s, part of the Sagebrush Rebellion. The Democrats saw an opportunity to put a plank in their platform of, you know, the environment is what we care about. Whereas prior, frankly, you know, when we looked at the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland catching fire, everybody agreed that's not right. So it wasn't a political stance. The environment wasn't a political thing until that 80s. Really kind of gets its face with Al Gore in the 90s as well. So I think, I mean, the polarization, you mentioned COVID and the distrust of science. And I think while it's there, I in my experience, at least, and, you know, so this is anecdotal and seeing what I read and interact with, that's a minority voice. I think the majority of folks, you know, are sensible enough to maybe not put their whole trust in science, you know, but to listen to it well and understand, be it with vaccines or with environmental things like this.
So in terms of really where the political differences are on the specific issue of climate change, could you maybe possibly address like where the issues fall and whether or not it really is an actual issue or whether it's not kind of just something that really is not the heart of the issue, but just more on the periphery?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, if I understand your question, I think at this point, most politicians, and I think most of the public, the majority at least, if you look at some of the surveys, I would agree that climate change is human caused. So the question isn't so much the science of understanding it, it's more the, well, what do we do now? And that's where the debate really sticks its head up. And people kind of conflate and confuse, oh, they're debating the science versus debating the policy. And I think those are not one and the same. And I think, too, the other thing with that, you know, no policy is perfect. And we've tried to hammer out a perfect solution. And every time we start to get there, the situation continues to change and evolve, and we haven't adapted to it yet. Because our policy making is a little on the slow side, in my opinion. So here we are, you know, it depends on who you ask, you know, we've got the first wins of this in Senate hearings in the early 80s as well. So, you know, we're 40, 50 years on of being aware of this potentially being an issue. But I think the politicization of it is really looking at, you know, what sort of policies make the best sense moving forward.
Yeah. And in terms of kind of differing policy positions, there are, at least in my understanding, there's kinds of these two terms that get thrown around. I hear environmentalism and then I hear conservationism. So could you maybe address what, if there is a difference between those things and maybe what they mean and maybe which one you would identify as, if any?
Sure. I think those two could be considered maybe more synonymous depending on who you're talking to exactly. Conservationism, I guess, collectively has a lot of the same goals as what we would think of as environmentalism. I think generally I would say conservationism tends to look more at maybe a more balanced approach as to use as opposed to hands-off or preservation. Whereas a lot of the environmentalism sides, I think, and again, this is, it's not a monolithic group, but they would tend more to the preservation or hands-off sort of approaches. So I think conservation looks at that, but also the utility and the use aspect. in particular. So yeah, between those two, I think I would kind of be more of the conservationist. I recognize that we do have needs to be met by what creation provides for us. And yet I also would say that there are parts of creation that are not just for me, they're for the rest of creation as well. So yeah, so there I would find some common ground with a quote unquote environmentalist.
Yeah. So when we think of kind of the Christian's response to climate change over the years, and we kind of think of some biblical basis for protecting the environment, we think of the creation mandate in Genesis, and we think of kind of some of the opposing views of like what you were talking about as like protecting what God has given us, but using it, being good stewards of the earth versus some more radical possibly arguments where the earth will burn one day, and until then God's given us, you know, free will over the earth to use it as we please. So how has that kind of influenced the Christian's response historically to this, and has it been a positive or has it been a negative kind of in your opinion?
Yeah, I think that's a huge question that takes days to answer. A few thoughts that I would put there is we often hear about the you referred to as the creation mandate and Genesis, end of Genesis 1. I've heard it referred to as the cultural mandate elsewhere, to rule over and have dominion. And in a lot of ways that was, I think that terminology was maybe co-opted or usurped and had a little bait and switch kind of in there as well, where that was equated with, you know, I have the authority to dominate. And really that's not what is being, I don't think, conveyed in that context, because in just the next chapter over Genesis 2, we see Genesis 2:8, God plants a garden, 2:15, by then he's putting man in the garden, Adam and Eve in the garden to work it and keep it, to serve with and protect it, some of the translation there. So that becomes the stewardship mandate. And I think the motivation for a lot of what I encourage my students to think about in whatever aspect of protecting the environment they're looking at, that that we seek to engage in that respect. I think kind of some of the places where it goes wrong is just failing to acknowledge a few pieces. One, failing to acknowledge that we are, I'll use the word image bearing earthlings. We are created in the image of God. We're separate in that regard from creation, but we're still creatures. We're still made as part of this creation. So we have a responsibility that's separate apart from the broader, you know, the rest of creation. And I think we've fallen short in fulfilling that role well, in various facets and all different sorts of timelines as well. So,
And you know, the goal of this podcast is to kind of address some of these issues and how Christians have maybe failed to address political issues in the past and what we can be doing, not only to address them from a biblical perspective, but also to share the gospel in doing that. And so my question for you is, in a time where it seems like there's so much societal pressure to buy like green products, you know, and it's expensive sometimes, and it seems like there's not a lot you can do in your everyday life without, you know, making big changes to the way you live. What are some of the ways that we as Christians can support the idea that, you know, we have a responsibility to the creation that God has given us, and, you know, moving forward from the past, how can we do that?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And I think there's two pieces to it. There's certainly like just the individual day-to-day choices, which you've mentioned. Those are certainly an important component. And then there's the larger kind of community cultural pieces that are a little harder to wrap our hands around, at least for me. Maybe other people do a better job of that. But so on a day-to-day basis, there's simple things and there's some harder things. I think the best thing is to just do the next right thing and keep working forward. So if it's a simple matter of just energy conservation, be it in your home, your dorm room, wherever you find yourself, if it's driving less, walking more, those are all good and I think right choices that we can make. I think if it's, you know, being smart about how much we're consuming and versus not wasting as well, also important, and that's goes to food, but also energy, water, and the like. But I think just sort of that conservation mindset in a day-to-day practice is really helpful. And just to kind of start to think about what, in what ways on a daily basis am I wasteful? You know, and being able to humbly acknowledge that, you know, I'm going to find spaces where that's the truth. I think we're all aware we waste time, you know, and I think we could redeem that. And there's other things that we could redeem through our lives. So I think those are some people, some things in our lives. You know, you mentioned it, it's not easy to, because a lot of the green things tend to be a little more expensive. I think the pushback on that is, well, why are all the other things so cheap? And maybe to think on that, maybe it's a little more expensive to support someone that's more local. And maybe that's a good thing where you're getting to know somebody on a personal level. Whereas if you go purchase things from your box store, you don't know where that came from. And so relationships can be important in this process too. I heard the somewhat disappointing, saddening thing that even if everybody in America did like all of the individual things that we could possibly do, it would only have like a dent in the larger picture, because so many of the other things are systemic. Just the way in which our society is built and the structural pieces. So I think those are the things that are I think challenging, because they take a much longer view out on the horizon of how do we get there. And it's not to say that we turn on our dime or anything like that, but thinking about where we get our energy from, how we move things around, how we move ourselves around, I think is going to take a little bit of reimagining to kind of get our hands on some of these climate change questions.
Yeah, I loved how you talked about, you know, shopping local instead of shopping at a box store, because that those relationships, even as a segment of the argument of climate change, help us propel the gospel. And we can explain that what we're doing is twofold. One, we want to witness to people, and two, that we want to protect the creation that God's given us. I think that's an amazing thing to think about. But you talk about, you know, policy. We talked about policy at the beginning and how it's hyper political, and, you know, but how it really will shape how we're able to move forward on this issue potentially. So what are ways that we individually, as people who are maybe thinking about going into politics or maybe have no interest in politics at all, but want to take part in the process, what are some practical ways that we can either petition these people or work with agencies or organizations that are trying to work on these issues?
Yeah, great. So I think, I mean, I'll speak from experience. I was kind of in the same boat. I was never apathetic, but I just didn't know what to do. And so I've gotten involved with some local groups that have a number of, I guess, things they're focused on, be it water. You know, we live in the Miami Valley watershed, and I'm interested in taking care of that place, but I'm also kind of engaging with some other people that are involved more on the climate policy side. And so by getting involved with them, I think number one, I wish I could do more of that because it's been a great way to get to know folks in the community that I wouldn't have otherwise run into. But two, it's been, I think, helpful for me to realize there's, and again, I don't know what sort of impact I'm having, but at this point, I make a call or two a month to my representatives just to let them know my support for various policies they're rolling through, or to support them in policies changes that they're pushing themselves already. So I think getting involved that way is a good way to connect to representatives. I think for folks that are considering more of a professional bent, moving that direction, I think there's another element of that altogether, where, you know, if you're in the nitty gritty of it, there's things you can do, and hopefully you can develop the relationships to find the information that you need. And then for me, I think, you know, as an educator, as a scientist, I kind of see both of those as functions to part of the solution. Again, a minuscule fraction of this, but I see a part of what I do, you know, in teaching and conveying some of these things to students as hugely important, because they're the ones that are going to go and start, you know, heading into the voting booth and having families and, you know, and living their lives as we do or as we choose. And so I think just education's a big piece of this too, and just knowing that what impacts we do have, and how as Christians we need to be maybe mindful of that.
Yeah, I love that so much. This is kind of an off-topic question, and it's kind of an odd question to follow up that really great comment that you just made. But, you know, we talk about different energy sources and the future, and just from your professional experience, what do you think the future is for energy? Do you think it's electric cars, or do you think it's solar energy or nuclear power plants or hydro fuel cell cars? Just what are kind of your thoughts on the trends that people can be looking at?
You have to pick one.
No, you can pick whatever you think.
No, I think I'm a strong believer in transitioning to renewables. I don't know that I have a set timeline on that because the way in which technology moves. Right. And so I think even this morning I was listening to a Tune News story about how the largest coal miners union was actually supportive of some of the new policy that's coming forward, that their caveat was, is we don't want to get left out of the job market. You know, if our jobs are going to disappear, we would like to kind of make our way into that. So I think that's a big concern of mine, you know, looking at sort of, you know, how do we actually transition to those people? You know, it's not just transitioning to new technologies, but it's transitioning a society of, you know, of an economy of workers. So I think I kind of take sort of the wedge approach, and we've already started on this as well with the opening up of the Marcellus and Utica shales. We've transitioned the United States to a net exporter of fossil fuels as opposed to an importer. So we're no longer relying on foreign nation states to support that, which I think is an important security piece. But I think secondarily to it, natural gas is a cleaner source of fuel and energy than coal and oil had been. And I think with the advent of solar and renewables kicking up, becoming cheaper and cheaper and cheaper for a kilowatt hour, I think that's making a lot more sense to folks. You know, and I think as the government becomes serious and engages on those, you know, to bring the subsidies or whatever in the equilibrium, I think it makes it all more. I might make myself a little unpopular, but I think nuclear is a piece to this as well. I think a lot of the technology that we have working is, you know, 2, 3, 4 decades old, and it just takes a long time to get new reactors up and running. It's not a perfect solution, I realize, but I think it's one of those spaces that we could probably do better in than we have been. And there's all sorts of, again, people know the stories that there. So I kind of think it, you know, looking at this next 50 years is going to be telling of where we're heading. My hope would be that we would track towards or away from fossil fuels and into more renewable sources for lots of reasons. And then, you know, fingers crossed, all that stuff for better technology to come along as well, to make those pieces even more efficient. To pair along with that, it's not just source, but it's our consumption piece. You know, we could do a better job there as well. So.
Yeah, as you mentioned earlier, we could spend hours and hours and hours talking about each one of these questions that I asked today. So I really appreciate you taking the time to just kind of provide us a brief overview of the topic. Last 60 seconds, love to just give you an opportunity. If there's anything you would love to particularly say, now is your chance.
It's my big moment.
It is.
No, thanks for that. As I was thinking, you let me know that question ahead of time, and I was thinking through this. So I had 3 quick thoughts that I jotted down, so hopefully I can get it in 60 seconds. The first was to quote Dr. Seuss, that is to say, unless someone cares a whole awful lot, nothing's going to get better. It's not. I think rings really true in this discussion that those individual choices matter. Second, and kind of building from that, look at the verse Micah 6:8. It says, what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God? I think for me, you know, in a lot of the daily decisions that I'm making and ways in which I'm engaging the world, those are questions I like to ask myself. And am I hitting those points well? Am I engaging with other folks in my community well? That is to say, it's not like I do it every day, and I don't get it right every day, certainly, and continue to fall in God's grace. But I hope that my choices reflect the principles that are rooted in love in some way, or in hopefully increasingly so. And the last thing I think that I fully realize in my field, it's really easy to kind of get lost in despair. because you look at all of these things that doesn't look good. And then an inevitable outcome, I think, for a lot of folks is either to move it toward ambivalence or just flat out apathy. But I think that that's the wrong approach. And I hope I could encourage whoever does listen to this, that, you know, taking those small steps while it might feel small is important. And just to borrow a quick quote from a climate scientist and a Christian, her name's Catherine Hayhoe. She said, we need to pursue rational hope. So looking towards that, I think, is a good goal. I think there's hope to be found. Certainly as believers, we have that. But I think even just as citizens, we can have that and share it as well. So starting conversations, having some conversations like this and moving towards those actions that fit your life is the goal. So, yeah.
I love that Dr. Seuss quote. I think it was Edmund Burke who, I'm going to paraphrase here, but I think he said, all it takes for bad to succeed is for the few good men to step back and not do anything. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we as Christians especially have hope, and that calls us to move into the world and to try and reach people for the gospel. And in doing that, we can impact topics like climate change and racism and all those other things. So thank you so much for participating in this. We really appreciate you coming on. I've learned so much. So
my pleasure. Thanks for doing it.
Yep. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Cedar 60 podcast. We hope you'll join us next time. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Cedar 60. If you enjoy exploring politics from a distinctly Christian perspective, please share this podcast with a friend. If you'd like to be notified about future episodes, please follow Cedar 60 on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, and look for our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks so much.